Could you pray for me for a moment? And I'll pray for you, that in poverty we can open our hearts to the Lord's gift. And let us entrust each other and our prayers to Our Lady's intercession. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. In poverty, we open our hearts to God's gift. And in fact, really, in poverty, we open our hearts to anyone's gift. And in a certain way, you are in the enviable position. I would rather be the one in poverty opening my heart to your gift. But I'll do my best to offer a gift as you open your hearts. What you put together for the all of the different quotations, really you could spend the next, well, the rest of your life, I think, just reflecting on those few sheets of paper. I don't feel that I can really add a whole lot to that, but I'll try to draw out a few points from that and from the readings so that we can open our gifts to this, our hearts to this gift of contemplation. To speak of contemplation, I think it's helpful. We speak about it as a gift. The Catechism says contemplative prayer is a gift, a grace. It can only be accepted in humility and poverty. We speak of how He awaits us. The Catechism says we awaken our faith in order to enter into the presence of Him who awaits us. We let our masks fall and turn our hearts back to the Lord who loves us. And in contemplation, we're really making a humble surrender, opening our hearts in poverty. I think contemplation could be restated simply as letting Him love us. Contemplative prayer, the Catechism says, is the poor and humble surrender to the loving will of the Father in an ever deeper union with His beloved Son. I think to see contemplation as simply letting Him love us helps to orient our hearts in the right way, and that's why contemplation is not an achievement. It's not the pinnacle of all of these efforts that we make to climb to a certain height. There's a truth there, too. I'm not saying that St. John of the Cross didn't know what he was talking about. That would be dangerous for me. There is an ascent of Mount Carmel, but ultimately it's not an accomplishment. It's not something that we climb up to. It's not something that we achieve. But contemplation already began with God's love for us, His eternal love for us. And contemplation is simply letting Him love us, opening our hearts to receive that gift. And that's where poverty is so essential, because we can't receive something that we already have. If we already have it, then we don't need it. And so our hearts aren't open to receive that. But when we allow ourselves to be poor, then we can receive a gift from the other. And it's in receiving that gift from God, the gift of love from God, that's what we call contemplative prayer, opening our hearts to that gift of love. And ultimately that opens us to everything. I'll come back to it a little bit later, but I think of St. Francis's Canticle of the Sun, for example. He sees everything as a gift from God. He opens his heart to everything as a gift from God. And so contemplation becomes something that is pervasive, that can accompany us throughout every moment of the day, because God is constantly loving us and He's constantly giving us gifts. And if we have a heart that's poor enough to see, that's not so filled up with ourselves like the Pharisee, that's not so convinced that we already have everything and therefore there's nothing to offer us, If we have a heart that's poor and open, then we can live constantly in receiving God's never-ending, self-giving love. And it helps us to go deeper into all of those things, as St. Francis showed us in his Canticle of the Sun, his meditation on so many gifts that God gives to us. So the Catechism also says this about contemplation. Unlike meditation, which we can't do all the time, we can't constantly be thinking about different things, but we can be living constantly in an openness to God's love. The Catechism says, one cannot always meditate, but one can always enter into inner prayer, independently of the conditions of health, work, or emotional state. The heart is the place of this quest and encounter, in poverty and in faith. And so, living in unceasing prayer, unceasing contemplative prayer, is living constantly under the loving gaze of the Father, and allowing that to be the ground, the foundation of all that we do, knowing unconditionally that we are loved and that his hand is extended out to us, living constantly beneath his gaze. And that cuts through a lot of the other things, not needing to prove ourselves, not needing to grasp after accomplishments and achievements, not needing to have things, not needing to justify our existence. We live constantly and receive life constantly as a gift of love from the Father. And so for this reason also, as the Catechism says, contemplation moves toward very few words. It's also why I feel awkward rambling on and on about contemplation. Contemplative prayer moves toward fewer and fewer words, coming to silence. Contemplative prayer is silence, the Catechism says, or silent love. Words in this kind of prayer are not speeches. They are like kindling that feeds the fire of love. And that's often all that we need in order to keep us in the loving gaze of the Father, is just a glance, just the slightest movement of our hearts, whether we're in a time of prayer and in Mass or in our holy hour in adoration, as we become more deeply convinced of God's unconditional love for us, so that we don't need to talk ourselves into it. That's one way that we could describe meditation. It's kind of talking ourselves into believing that God really loves us that much, that our life is truly a gift, that he really is with us in the Eucharist, that he really wants to give us everything out of love. Meditation sort of talks ourselves into that. When we're more and more convinced of this, then we don't need so much convincing and extensive meditation. Then we can come to a place that just a little reminder becomes enough. A wedding ring, maybe, or a word that he spoke out of love to us this morning, or last week, or 10 years ago, just a little word, or as St. Francis de Sales describes it, having walked in the garden of paradise, we take a little flower with us and put it in our breast pocket, and then just a little sniff of that flower is enough to remind us that he is looking upon us with love, that his love is total and unconditional, and it opens our hearts again, not necessarily needing to engage our minds or even our feelings, but just opening the depths of us to receive, to live in the loving gaze of the Father. And so all of that, our meditations can become a kind of possession that we don't want to let go of, a way of sort of proving our love, that we can think of all of these wonderful things. But that's part of the poverty of contemplation, is we start to let go of those things more and more. And in fact, we even start to lose a grasp of what's happening. We have this deep inner connection with his love, and we can't really turn that into words or images anymore. We can't grasp it and possess it, control it and own it. We have to live in the open-handed posture of one who is constantly receiving and not able to get our hands around this. I was praying with this last night and looking at that beautiful relief that I've had so much beautiful prayer with. And I thought, well, here's finally a place that I can say, because Mary has to be in one posture and not another, and so all of these things are inherently limited. But I thought, Mary looks like she knows too much what's going on. She's somehow like she's in control of the situation. Now, there's a truth to that, of course. She's confident in the loving gaze of the Father, and so she can look up into the eyes of Jesus and be there with absolute confidence. And at the same time, I thought, if we could imagine, I wouldn't want to change this at all, but if we could imagine simultaneously a posture of her hands just being kind of out and open, expressing at the same time this just open posture of receptivity, and at the same, and also, why is this happening? What's happening? How do I do this? And that kind of poverty that we're left in contemplation, convinced of God's love for us, and having no idea what we're doing at the same time. And surely there must have been an element of that in Our Lady at the foot of the cross. What is this? What all is happening? And fiat, I give everything. I accept all that you are doing. But that element of poverty is constantly with our contemplation. There's a way in which we don't know what's happening. And that becomes part of the purification that leads us into the prayer of union, is being able to let go of what our minds are doing and what our feelings are doing. All of this stuff, I like, one of the sisters shared a book with me, the Life Within the Prayer of Union, and Father Dominic Hoffman talks about the purification that leads us into the unitive way. And he describes sort of an outer circle of all of our faculties, our intellect and our sentiment, and being able to make logical deductions and put one thought after another and create images and all of those things in the kind of outer circle of our inner life. And then there's an inner circle, which is an intuitive knowledge, an inner circle which is an act of the will, a single act of love, endlessly prolonged. And that inner circle we don't have so much control over. We can't sort of get in there and manipulate that intuitive knowledge or that prolonged act of love, sort of a movement, a direction of our intentionality. And part of the purification is being able to let go of the connection. Sometimes we can influence the inner circle by the outer circle, but God needs us even to let go of that our active thoughts and our meditations and our words and all of that become disconnected from this inner circle, so that we can remain in silence and poverty, always beneath the loving gaze of the Father. And then we become more free also to do with the outer circle whatever things we need to do during the day, and we can become free in that way as well. But to remain in that poverty of just being open to His love is so necessary for contemplation. The problem with contemplation and poverty and mercy is it's so easy to leave out the mercy part. But mercy comes in the fact that really it was enough for God. It was already a mercy that He loved us once, that He made one gesture of love toward us. And in our lack of poverty, in being filled up with our own sinfulness and being filled up with our own fears and pride and being filled up with ourselves, we weren't fully open to that one gesture of love that He gave us. And by rights, He could walk away then. But the fact that He never walks away, the fact that He renews that act of love again and again before His sinful creatures, is where mercy comes in. That endless mercy which never gives up on us, which never stops extending Himself, which never stops giving us the gift of a new day. I can't say giving us the gift of sunshine exactly. Well, it's there beneath the clouds, but giving us the gift of a new day, giving us the gift of another breath, giving us the gift of another chance, giving us another grace of love, to give us the opportunity to open to Him in contemplative receptivity, giving us the chance to open our hands and let go of those things which make us feel safe and comfortable and in control, whatever of our own gifts and talents that we find ourselves clinging to. Mercy is his renewal of that gift of love again and again before beloved brides and sons and daughters who too often close our hearts to him. One of the things that I thought was very beautiful, and it was repeated a number of times in the list of little quotations that you have to pray with today, is a couple of different spiritual writers reflected on how poverty reveals God's tenderness to us. And that's one of the reasons that we don't like to be poor, is because it makes us feel our own weakness. It makes us feel vulnerable. It makes us feel how we can be hurt. If I don't have all of my list of accomplishments and degrees, if I don't have all of my own defenses and rhetoric to hide behind, if I don't have all of my own skills that I can build up as a wall to prove my worth and the value of my existence, if I let go of all of those things, I find myself profoundly vulnerable. And that's one of the reasons we run from that kind of poverty, because we have been hurt, or we can imagine being hurt if we were really that vulnerable. But when we become that vulnerable before God, we discover how profoundly tender he is as he sees that extremely fragile creature before him. He doesn't manhandle us, but rather with such tenderness holds us and keeps us from breaking, holds every delicate feature that's so loosely and poorly put together in us. He holds all of that without breaking anything. And when we have the courage to become that poor and vulnerable before him, then we discover a more and more profound tenderness that he has with us, cradling us and caring for us and holding us, which again opens us to this contemplative prayer as we experience these very fine movements of God's love. Our contemplation opens to receive that, to receive each of those tender movements of his love. Father Jacques Philippe said, "Mature Christians who have truly become children of God are those who have experienced their radical nothingness, their absolute poverty, been reduced to nothing. At the bottom of their nothingness, they have finally discovered the inexpressible tenderness, the absolutely unconditional love of God. Henceforth, their only support and hope is the boundless mercy of their Father, God." So as we allow ourselves to be stripped more and more of all of those things that we cling to keep us safe, Pope Francis described it that way yesterday as he reflected. It's a beautiful homily, very much worth reading. He reflected on the blind Bartimaeus, which seems to me to be a classic Ignatian meditation. But we had this son of St. Ignatius offering us probably a lifelong worth of treasure on the blind Bartimaeus. He speaks of Bartimaeus casting off his cloak, and Pope Francis said, "Let us cast aside all that prevents us from racing towards him, unafraid of leaving behind those things which make us feel safe and to which we are attached." And it's a great description of the kind of poverty that we resist. We don't want to let go of those things that make us feel safe. And we can stack up whatever it is. It's a great examination. What are the things that I cling to that make me feel safe? Again, it's one of the reasons that we might be unwilling to let go of our meditation, let go of all of our words and images. It might be a reason that we're afraid to let go of our office, our position, of our rights and privileges, a reason that we're afraid to let go of the consolations in food, or the consolations in different activities and communications. We shouldn't also strip ourselves in a violent way that would destroy our humanity, but are we willing to let go? If God is gently trying to draw us away from someone's friendship or from someone's affirmation, if God is trying to gently draw away from us our own successes and skills, God is trying to gently draw away from us our, our position or our responsibility, our job, our ministry and community, if God is trying to gently draw those things away from us, do we find ourselves clinging and holding on to them? Again, we don't want to do violence and throw away things that he wants us to have and that he's given us. As long as he gives, extend, places things in our hands, we should treasure them and use them always as his gift, always recognizing that these are his gift. But when he's trying to gently draw those away from us to make us poor, to fill us with his love, are we willing to let him make us poor in that way and draw away those things that make us feel safe? Another point that I thought was beautiful from those reflections, and that Pope Francis also went into a little bit in his homily yesterday, was that poverty has a way of making us go deep. Poverty opens up a greater depths of ourselves. We can see it in a simple way, even if we think of cleaning our rooms, for example. All of our possessions have a way of piling up. And the more that things are piled up within us, then the more superficially we live. Whereas we start to clear those things out and we go deeper and deeper, we make space, we go into our depths. And that's where, again, we feel the things that we tend to cover up and pile up over are our vulnerabilities and weaknesses, our inadequacies. We cover over those things that make us feel insecure, that make us feel unlovable. And as we empty out all of those things we're clinging to make us feel safe, and we expose that weakness and vulnerability, we expose our inadequacies, that helps the Lord to reach the deepest places in us with his tenderness, helps us to go deep and not remain superficial. Pope Francis said, "Sin, the blindness of sin, leads us little by little to dwell on what is superficial, until we are indifferent to others and to what is good." He says, how many temptations have the power to cloud the heart's vision and make it myopic? How easy and misguided it is to believe that life depends on what we have, on our successes, and on the approval we receive. And then one of the quotes from your reflections today from Father Donald Haggerty, he says, before he gives himself more fully, God surely waits for the hunger of a soul to reach a depth of intensity. The soul's pleading must resemble a beggar's voice, long accustomed to refusal. A beggar's voice, long accustomed to refusal. That's a desperate kind of begging. And that happens when we have less and less to cling to, when we have less and less of our own possessions, less and less of that stuff which makes us feel like our life is successful and an accomplishment and we have all of these plaques to hang on the wall. The less that we have of that, the more desperately we beg for help. Perhaps our great challenge is remaining poor. It's nice to be poor for a moment, to receive God's gift, and then to cling to that and to feel rich. Remaining poor is the trouble. And that's where our gospel gives us such a beautiful image with the publican, the tax collector. He remains poor before God. He simply says, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. He doesn't then follow that with, but I wouldn't have been a sinner if this sister, if this thing, if you hadn't, if he doesn't make any excuses. He simply remains there, poor. I'm a sinner. God, have mercy on me, a sinner. Just to remain poor. He doesn't also run away from it with all kinds of promises. God, have mercy on me, a sinner. But tomorrow I'm going to do better, and I'm getting better at this, and I'm working on this, and I have this 10-step plan in order to reach at this. No, he just stays there. God, have mercy on me, a sinner. And remaining in that poverty is so hard. We want to run to the promises of what we will achieve tomorrow, or run to the excuses of why we couldn't do that in the past. But to remain poor in the present, simply as we are, is so hard for us. At this point, I have to give Father Tom a voice, since he was also quoted in your materials. He wrote in his book, The Passion of the Lamb, "It is necessary to actually go to the lowest place in one's heart to pray. Consider the tax collector, who knew he was a sinner and could barely raise his eyes to say, 'God be merciful to me, a sinner.' I must remember, however, that if I do not seek to live in this lowest place, I will probably not be able to pray there either, and vice versa. In our prayer and in our life, we have to remain in this awareness that we are poor sinners on whom God has had mercy, and not run from that into 1,000 excuses. We are incomplete, we are inadequate, we are unfinished, we are experiencing the limitations of our humanity, which can be so devastating. Another beautiful quote from your list, Father Bernard Brough said, "Every man, one day or another, becomes aware of his poverty as a creature. And since this experience is a crushing one, the natural temptation is therefore distractions, or as Pascal said, diversions. There is an impatience with one's limitations, a natural temptation that urges us to flee before such limitations, but to remain there like that tax collector." And that's where contemplation takes hold, to remain there in the free gift, unconditional, unending, free gift of God's love. Well, again, just to mention it, since I promised I would, St. Francis's movement again shows us poverty to contemplation. Contemplation, as we receive God's love, as we receive everything as a gift, the other thing that happens, again, tied in with the fact that poverty and contemplation lead us to a depth. And we have that sense of contemplation. Someone who is contemplative sees beneath the surface, sees to the depth, the essence of things. And contemplation leads us that way, because the fact is that what we receive as a gift, we are able to see more of than what we take hold of, that we seize with our hands. Think of any relationship. What someone willingly shares with us is far more than what we can take and grasp for ourselves. And so when St. Francis was able to let go of everything, let go of his eyesight, let go of anything he could have as a material possession, it also opened him to a contemplative gift to be able to receive an even deeper insight. Those things, sun and moon and fire and water, were able to reveal more of the essence of themselves when they weren't being taken, snatched at, seized by violence. They could trust themselves to give to him. And so we always receive more when we're able to let go and allow the other to reveal himself to us. And then I just want to finish with one last point that you can reflect on that struck me from the first reading. I think we can say that not only do we contemplate God, but he also contemplates us in the sense that he makes himself poor and opens himself to our love. We hear this beautiful cry from the prophet Hosea, "It is love that I desire, knowledge of God." God wants to be loved and known by us. He simply wants our love. He's made himself poor. God doesn't need our love in an existential sense, but he's made himself poor and opens himself in contemplation, in that poverty, in order to receive our love, our glance, our hearts, to receive the gift of ourselves. And by his poverty, he has made us rich. He has deprived himself of something that only we can give him. He can't take for himself, and he can't manufacture in any other way our free gift of love for him. And so he also makes himself poor and contemplates us and opens himself to our mercy. So all that we are receiving from him, we can also reciprocate. And we hold the greatest treasure simply in the gift of our love and our knowledge. And he makes himself so accessible to us, because isn't it all that we really most deeply want is to be known and to be loved? God himself identifies with that and makes himself poor. So as we have this opportunity now to receive in the depths of our own poverty the full gift of his love in the Eucharist, he also makes himself poor. If we weren't taking this time to confect the Eucharist, he wouldn't do it on his own. He waits for us to love him and to know him, to make him present and to offer again that sacrifice of his love to the Father.